May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. Back in 2014, I did an interim assignment in the Diocese of Western Louisiana. And when it came time for my return to St. Louis, the vestry gave me a piece of art to remember them by. And it's by the Louisiana artist Candace Alexander. Alexander is very well known for her fleur-de-lis art, and all of her designs and paintings either prominently feature a fleur-de-lis or the entire picture is contained within a very large fleur-de-lis. Now I have it with me. I'm gonna try to show it to you for a minute, and then I'm going to describe it, okay? Well, there are several reasons why I love this piece of art. And one of them was that when the vestry chose this piece, there were connections that at the time were made and they seemed a bit serendipitous, but I believe they were actually much deeper than that. For example, they didn't know that the fleur-de-lis, the symbol of the state of Louisiana, is also the symbol of the city of St. Louis. And that makes a lot of sense because both Louisiana and St. Louis were founded by French and French Canadian Catholics. What they didn't know was that I am a descendant of French Canadian Catholics. My mother's maiden name was Bellinger, pronounced Bellinger in Quebec, where her family was from, and pronounced Bellinger in New Jersey, where I was born. And when I was in Louisiana, I had this sense of belonging that I couldn't quite put my finger on. And I think this long ago connection to my French Canadian roots was the reason. So anyway, the symbol of the fleur-de-lis just seemed to bind our time together in a special way. They also didn't know that the fleur-de-lis, much like the Irish shamrock, is a symbol of the Trinity. And the parish that I was serving at the time was named Holy Trinity. Now, my piece of art is called The Story. And in its center is the large fleur-de-lis. And within that large fleur-de-lis is the risen Christ. He's dressed in his priestly robes and is holding up his hands where you can see the marks of the nails driven into them. Okay. And in the center of his chest is the sacred bleeding heart surrounded by fire. And his halo is a compass with arrows pointing in all different directions. To the left of the fleur-de-lis, in much less detail, you won't be able to see it unless you're up close here, there are very rough line drawings of the manger and the Star of Bethlehem blazing overhead. And in the center, directly under the fleur-de-lis, there are silhouettes of the three wise men on camels riding towards the manger. And off to the right, slightly elevated than the manger and in a grove of trees, is the white body of a crucified Jesus. Jesus is translucent, but not quite transparent. And then above the fleur-de-lis itself is a dove in flight. And the entire picture is painted over a photograph of sunlit clouds, giving the fleur-de-lis an almost backlit quality. There is a quality to this piece that is both backward looking and forward gazing. And the fleur-de-lis with the risen Christ would not make any sense without the rough line drawings of the manger, wise men, crucifix. And the line drawings are rough and incomplete without the risen Christ in the fleur-de-lis. Separately, they appear disjointed, but together they tell the whole story. Together, the picture called The Story makes sense. Well, in today's gospel reading, we have a similar scene. The 11 are in the upper room, two followers of Jesus have just arrived, and they'd been on the road to Emmaus when a stranger joined them and asked why they were looking so sad. And they were incredulous that the stranger did not know what had happened in the city 3 days earlier. As it was getting late, they invite him to dinner. And then the invited stranger does something very odd. He takes the role of host. He takes the bread, blesses it, breaks it, and gives it to them. And it's in this action that their eyes are opened and they realize that Jesus is with them. And then as soon as they experience that recognition, Jesus vanishes, and they leave immediately to tell the other disciples of their experience. Now, while they're recounting this experience, Jesus appears to all of them and says, "Peace be with you." And we're told that they were absolutely terrified. They believed that they were seeing a ghost. Well, let's face it, dead people do not routinely come back to life. And to see someone who was very publicly and very gruesomely put to death was either a mass hallucination or a miracle the likes of which has never been seen before. And Jesus knows that they're both afraid and doubting. And he says, "Look, here are my hands. Here are my feet. Touch me. It's okay. You see, I've got skin and bones. Ghosts don't have skin and bones." And then we're told, while in their joy, they were disbelieving and still wondering. They were terrified, thrilled, and joy-filled all at the same time. And they still weren't quite sure what to make out of all of this. They knew what they wanted to believe. They just weren't sure if they could believe it. It just didn't make any sense. And then, to add to the bizarre nature of the situation, Jesus says, "By the way, have anything to eat?" And then he stands there eating a piece of broiled fish as if a dead man eating a piece of fish is the most natural thing in the world. Which one of us standing there with the disciples in astonishment, joy, and belief wouldn't think that we were watching a ghost or that we had lost our minds? Then he said to them, "These are my words that I spoke to you while I was with you, that everything written about me in the law and the prophets, Moses, the Psalms, must be fulfilled." And then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures. It was because of the resurrection that they could understand the scriptures again for the very first time. It's because Jesus was not a ghost, but a living and breathing man and standing right in front of them, that everything that they had been taught was seen and understood in a new way and in a new light. Those rough line drawings of Torah and the stories of the exile and the Exodus, the suffering servant of Isaiah, the cry of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me?" are all gathered up and fleshed out and is eating fish in front of them. Jesus is standing in front of them, backlit, as it were, by the light of God's redeeming work throughout history. And yet, he is telling them that the future is dependent on their being witnesses to the whole story. The Torah, the exile, the Exodus, the suffering servant of Isaiah, Psalm 22. The future is dependent on them being witnesses to the manger, the wise man, and the crucifixion. They are witnesses to the resurrection of the risen one and to how the story now, finally, makes complete sense. Their lives were not disjointed individual events that had no meaning. Their lives were joined together in ways that may have felt serendipitous, but they were really made up of much deeper connections. Their lives were drawn together by the hands and feet of Jesus. They tried to make sense out of their situation by coming together and talking about him, in eating together, in telling each other about their experiences with them. The disciples didn't know what to make of Jesus standing among them. Their understanding of the resurrection and what it meant was worked out together over time. Jesus didn't tell that he would come to them only when they believed and then call them out to witness. Jesus came to them in their confusion and joy, in their disbelief and fear. And it was in the coming together that Jesus appeared, dispelled their fear, and opened the scriptures to them. Is that not the way it is with us as well? We don't have to believe perfectly or understand everything. And we may have more questions than answers. We may be fearful and anxious, joyful and wondering all at the same time. And that's okay. Our lives are not disjointed individual events that have no meaning. Our lives are drawn together in what sometimes feels like serendipity, but in actuality is made up of much, much deeper connections. Our lives are drawn together by the hands and feet of Jesus. Our lives are drawn together in such simple ways. We're drawn together by talking about him, eating with him, and witnessing to what we have seen and heard and experienced. We aren't called to witness to having all the answers. We are called to witness to the risen Christ among us. We are called to share our story of how Jesus makes sense in our lives and in our pain. We're called to witness to the fact that the simple acts of eating together and talking together and sharing our lives together, Jesus Christ comes into the midst of us and gives us the courage to live freely, boldly, and joyfully. We're called to tell our stories. And in the telling of our stories, his story will be told and believed. Our lives are incomplete without his story, and his story is incomplete without our story. And when you think about it, that's the only way that either one of them makes sense. Amen.